passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Today it is April 29. We are firmly into the stretch run of college baseball's regular season. And over at baseballamerica.com, there's a whole new top 25 that you can go check out. And UCLA remains number one. This is the seventh straight week UCLA has remained number one in the top 25. Stanford, again, follows at number two. Vanderbilt moves up to number three. They're your new SEC leader. I suppose they're tied with Arkansas, who's number five. Sandwiched between the SEC division leaders is Oregon State, which remains at number four. Mississippi State is up to six after a big sweep of Georgia. Louisville remains at seven. They continue to be your ACC leaders. And from there, I would encourage you to check out the rest of the top 25 over at baseballamerica.com. I will also tell you that we have three new teams in the top 25. They are Miami, Missouri, and BYU. We will get to all of that. We'll get to these new teams. We'll get to how we got here this week in a minute. But I want to welcome in Dave Serrano and Joe Healy to the podcast. How's it going, guys?
Glad to be back, Teddy.
Hey, Teddy. Happy to be here. Ready to get going.
All right. So this week around college baseball, especially in the Big 12 and the SEC, it was sweeps week. We had several sweeps in the SEC alone. There were, I think it was five of the SEC series ended in sweeps. The Big 12 saw a couple of big sweeps with Baylor and Texas Tech. Both sweeping series, and those are your top two teams in the Big 12 standings right now after those sweeps. I don't know. There were other sweeps around the country as well. UCLA swept Utah, for instance. Oregon State swept Washington State. Those are maybe a little less unexpected. You know, that's kind of what we think is going to happen when the top teams play the bottom. But for the SEC to have been so sweep-heavy this weekend, and for the Big 12, where Texas Tech swept Oklahoma State and Baylor went on the road to sweep TCU, I mean, those were pretty unexpected. That's not what you expect to see during conference play, especially. So what do we make of all of those sweeps in those conferences last weekend? And is winning on the road that hard in college baseball right now? Because with the exception of Baylor, every team that swept this weekend was doing it at home in those two leagues. So Dave, is winning on the road that hard right now in college baseball?
Well, I think it kind of goes off of the conference you're in. And obviously if you're in a conference like the SEC or in some atmospheres, the Big 12, and in some atmospheres, the ACC, winning on the road is difficult because you're going into such a hostile environment. The sweeps that happened this weekend, you know, you'd put out who impacted the most from them. I'm not so sure. I know the teams that all swept were impacted in a positive way, but I think it's the teams that got swept that are impacted in the negative way. It's just, you just can't get swept, whether you're at home or on the road, you can't get swept. As you're building toward your resume and as you're trying to build towards getting as high as you can in your conference. And I thought Todd Walker on the SEC network had a great comment in yesterday's game that was televised with Tennessee and Arkansas that saw Arkansas sweep Tennessee. And he said, You just have to win a game a weekend, especially in the SEC, and win a couple series, and you put yourself in the mix of getting to the tournament. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. You just have to prevent being swept. And, you know, on the road, going back to your question, yes, I think it is harder to win on the road in the big atmospheres that you play in. When the team gets the momentum, the crowd gets the momentum going for them at times. And it is difficult to win in those situations. But if you're going to be a national champion contender, you've got to find ways to get past that and get at least a victory. And sometimes you come out on top, like what Baylor did this weekend. They go into TCU, and I'm sure the atmosphere at TCU isn't as rambunctious as it is at times when they're rolling, but still they went on the road and they swept a huge series against TCU, which is huge for them and puts a huge dent into TCU's postseason chances from here on out.
I kind of think of it this way. I mean, when Team A is significantly more talented or better, or just play significantly better than Team B, Team A is going to win that series or sweep that series kind of regardless of where it's played. But what we've had a lot this season, I think we can kind of all agree, and we've talked about this a lot over the entirety of the season, that there's just a little more parity this year. There's not the dominant teams at the top, I guess, outside of UCLA and Stanford, but we're setting the Pac-12 aside for this conversation. So when it's a flatter landscape and there's just more toss-up series, I think home field just ends up kind of being a tiebreaker, where if you've got two teams that both have flaws, you know, both have some things going for them, both play reasonably well, but both make some mistakes, I think that home field ends up being the thing that can kind of determine a series. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here, where, you know, the home teams just kind of have that little extra edge that puts them over the top. And that's how you end up with a weekend full of sweeps.
Yeah, I mean, I guess ultimately it feels very strange. It feels like we have some teams that are yo-yoing right now. We had Mississippi State just a week ago getting swept at Arkansas and then coming home to Starkville and sweeping Georgia, which came in as the number three team in the country and the SEC East leader. And you know, you have Ole Miss, which has been all over the map. Like they really struggle to string momentum together from weekend to weekend. They come up with a top 10 sweep against Texas A&M, and suddenly Ole Miss is back into the hosting conversation. And, you know, you look at it in the Big 12 with Oklahoma State going to Lubbock and getting swept. That probably killed the Cowboys' hosting chances unless they, you know, really finish strong. They do have a series at Corvallis coming up this weekend. But, you know, if they don't win that, they're going to be they're probably going to be done as hosts. And so at the back of the hosting, you know, list, we have these sweeps really impacting a lot of things. And when you look at the top eight seed potential, like those teams for the most part are not getting swept. Georgia and Mississippi State probably are both still firmly in that mix. They definitely are. But you know, you look at Arkansas, you look at Vanderbilt, you look at Georgia, they all have winning records on the road, you know, pretty strong winning records on the road, as does Louisville in the ACC. And then some of these other teams, you know, Texas Tech is 500 on the road. Under 500, actually, just away from Lubbock, if you're on neutral sites. LSU, well under 500 on the road. North Carolina, under 500 on the road. A&M, under 500 on the road. And these are all teams that are, you know, trying to lock down some of these last few host spots. And if they just win a couple more road games, if they just avoid getting swept, they would be in a much better position as they look towards that. I guess right now, what do you see? Dave mentioned that, you know, that these sweeps are most significant for the teams getting swept. And, you know, like you mentioned, TCU probably just got swept out of the NCAA tournament. You know, Tennessee took a real hit this weekend. They go from 9-9 in the SEC to all of a sudden they're 9-12, and they're going to be fighting to get back to 500 probably the rest of the way. But from the teams that won in the SEC or swept this weekend in the SEC, that's Arkansas sweeping Tennessee, Mississippi State sweeping Georgia, Mizzou sweeping South Carolina, Ole Miss sweeping A&M, and Vanderbilt sweeping Auburn. Which one of those stood out as the most for you, or do you feel like is the most meaningful for those teams?
Well, I think just looking at the big picture, I think Arkansas probably solidified a home regional out of the sweep. I think Mississippi State has almost solidified one now. Vanderbilt obviously has two. I think out of the whole big picture of the SEC, and that's what we're talking about right now, I think probably Missouri taking care of business at home against South Carolina and Ole Miss sweeping Texas A&M probably will have the biggest impact on those two programs as they go farther into the season. I don't know if either one of them right now are in the hosting talk, but I think it just gives them a better seed as we go farther into it. But I think that those two out of the other three are kind of already set in pretty good. Mississippi State needed it after the previous weekend. But I think Missouri, where they put themselves now at 10-10-1, third in the East, I think that helps them, and I think it helped Ole Miss, who, like you said, has been a yo-yo. Going back real quick, and I don't want to be long, talk too long, but going back to as my days as a coach, I always felt that there was a couple things that were very impressive to me, and that was Baylor's big blowout on Saturday and Arkansas's big blowout on Saturday, and they come back and they win the Sunday game. That was always the scary thing for me as a coach, is when I was on that side of the ball, mostly when I was at Fullerton and Irvine, you always worried about your team's mindset going into Sunday. If they thought it was going to be easy again, and both those teams took care of business on Sunday, Baylor with another blowout on Sunday. And I always felt, and I learned this from Coach Horton when I worked under him, and we talked about this at all, every stop of that, Sunday was always attitude day. And I felt no matter who was the better team, who had more talent, the team that showed up with the best attitude a lot of times came out victorious, because it's usually the Sunday starters, so it's going to be kind of a slugfest. It's a long weekend, whether you're at home or you're on the road. It's getaway day if you're on the road. It was the team that showed up with the best attitude that was usually going to come out on top. So when I look at Sunday scores, that's what I always kind of look at, is the attitude team most of the time won that game on, to close out the weekend.
So I kind of will echo what Dave said. I mean, I think Ole Miss and Mizzou were the two most impactful, and I think of it this way, where I think you get the most value add. Obviously, if you don't get in the tournament, that's, you know, you want to get into the tournament. That gives you the best chance to win a national title, because breaking news, if you don't get in the tournament, you can't. I don't know if you guys know that. You can't win the national title if you don't get in the but beyond that,
no,
I think there's
– no NIT in baseball.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So I think it's kind of like how they say in the MLB playoffs, you know, you just push for that playoff spot, because once you get into the postseason, anything can happen. And I feel the same way kind of with hosting. I think there's a larger percentage value add that goes from not hosting to hosting than anything else, versus going from hosting to a national seed. Because once you're a national seed, like, yes, it's nice to be protected for those two rounds and play at home, but so much can happen in a regional that if you're hosting, well, you're in a position where if that national seed across from you gets upset, well, all of a sudden now you're at home. So there's always that opportunity. But so I think Ole Miss really helped themselves from a hosting perspective, and I think it's a team that is going to benefit greatly from hosting if they can do so, just because they're a team that needs to kind of stay on schedule pitching-wise. Their starting pitching has been pretty up and down this season, and last weekend it was really good. But because it's a little bit variable in that way, I think it's important for them to end up hosting when it's all said and done. So I think that was a big deal for them to get back into that hosting conversation, because I just think that's going to be their best path to challenging to get to Omaha. And Mizzou is big too. I mean, because they do have to get into the tournament, and you know, if they had just won two out of three in that South Carolina series, and they were down in the finale, I think it was 5-2 at one point. It might have been worse than that, I'm not sure, but when I saw it, it was 5-2, and so they really did a nice job coming back to finish off that sweep. If they hadn't done that, it puts them in a situation where they've got three series left: Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Florida, where they probably, if they had not swept, had to go 6-3 in those nine games to feel pretty good about things. Of course, with the SEC tournament still providing opportunities in front of them, but now they just need to go 5-4, and obviously Vanderbilt's going to be a real tough ask. You know, Tennessee is going to be a team desperate to get some wins. That's not going to be easy, and that never was going to be easy. And then Florida last week in the season could be playing for the lives too. So I think it's just a really tough existence for Mizzou the rest of the way. So just that one more game in the standings was huge for them. So it wouldn't have, had they not done it, it wouldn't have put a nail in any sort of coffin for them. But I think it's just made their path a little bit easier.
Yeah, I think those are good points all the way around. I generally probably agree that Ole Miss had the most important sweep. Obviously, Missouri, like Joe's saying there, with just getting into the tournament, you can't underestimate just the importance of adding that extra win as they try and get to 15 SEC wins on the year. But I'm going to make the case for Mississippi State just for a little bit of variation here. I think that, you know, when you're looking at what the Bulldogs were at coming into where they were coming into the weekend, having just been swept by Arkansas, you know, they're sitting at that point at 10-8 in the SEC. They're staring at a schedule that still has Georgia, A&M, Ole Miss, and South Carolina on it. And we talked about last week how that actually set up fairly advantageously for them, we felt like, but it still was going to be challenging. And in last week's Field of 64 projection, they dropped out of the top eight seeds, just barely, but they did drop out of that. And while they have a decent road record, this is a team that plays way, way better at home. And, you know, they're 5-5 on the road, which is okay, but, you know, they're 28-4 at the new dude, and playing in that atmosphere in a regional and in a super regional is going to be majorly advantageous to them, because, you know, that the teams that are coming in there are not going to have experienced 13,000 Mississippi State fans and all the cowbells and everything that comes along with playing in the postseason in Starkville. So I think that what they were able to do pushes them back into that top eight seed right now. I mean, their RPI is up to 5 after going 4-0 last week. You throw in the win in Pearl and the Governor's Cup against Ole Miss, and it was a fantastic week for Mississippi State. And you start looking at it now, and I mean, yeah, they have these back-to-back road series coming up against A&M and Ole Miss, but now they have a little bit of breathing room here with them having that gaudy RPI and being up to 13-8 in the SEC with the series at South Carolina to close it out. So I feel like the Bulldogs really made a statement this weekend, and it was a needed one after getting swept at Arkansas and Baum just a week ago. Before we move on a little bit here, I wanted to also mention the Big 12. You know, the top two teams there right now are Texas Tech and Baylor. That's coming off of sweeps, like I mentioned. Baylor now has a game and a half lead on Texas Tech. The Bears really have been impressive in Big 12 play this season. Just done a great job bouncing back from some injuries. Dave, I know I'm stealing from your shout out again this week, but when we look at what the Bears have been able to do, what they were able to do on the road this weekend, what kind of stands out to you about the Bears?
Well, I think just consistency. I think Steve Rodriguez has done a great job of keeping that team. I saw it last year coming. I really thought when we played them last year, I thought they were a team that had a chance, depending on where they got seated and what regional they went to, that had a chance to maybe get to Omaha. They fell short. And I really thought coming into this year that if they stayed injury-free, which hasn't been the case, they'd make a run. And I go back to the injury-free. They've had some major injuries, and they're still at the top of the Big 12, and they're a team that someone's going to have to, you know, be reckoned with throughout the playoffs. I just think he's done a great job. He's done a very good job of they're playing consistent baseball. They've had their bleeps along the way, but I mean, they've taken care of business, and they just keep trucking along. And, you know, again, I don't want to continue to pounce on it, but obviously TCU's not having the year that they are accustomed to having, but to go on the road and sweep them and not just sweep them. I mean, sweep them going away. I think they outscored them by 27 runs. The last game was shortened. It's just amazing feat with what Steve, Coach Rodriguez has done and his coaching staff to continue to take that team to great heights in that program.
Joe, they have 6 games left, Baylor and Texas Tech, in the Big 12. They both have a finals break coming up here in a couple weeks. For Baylor, the remaining schedule in the Big 12 is home against Kansas State and then at Oklahoma State. Texas Tech is at Oklahoma and then home to TCU to close it out. They are chasing the Bears by a game and a half. Texas Tech just won the series in Lubbock a weekend ago, but did Baylor call game this weekend?
Yeah, I think so. Just because, you know, I think that those remaining schedules are pretty comparable. If you, you know, it's going to be crazy to say that K-State and TCU are kind of on equal footing, but K-State's been playing a lot better of late. TCU has been fading. And then I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are fairly comparable. And I think they're both solidly regional teams who've kind of come in and out of the top 25 at different weeks. So I think we have a good feel for what they are. Just very good, but not great teams. They're both going to be in the postseason. So I think those are both kind of, you know, I think they're both going to look to kind of go 4-2 in those six games. And I just think a game and a half is a lot to overcome. And Texas Tech has looked like the team that we thought they would be coming into the season the last few weeks. And that's great news for them. I mean, look, would they love to win the Big 12 regular season? Yes, absolutely. I'm sure that's something that they want. That's one of their goals. But if they can win enough games to get themselves into the hosting position, they host a regional. That's really all that ends up mattering, is putting yourself in the best position to win a national title. And, you know, they would still, that is still an opportunity in front of them. So I don't think they'll necessarily be shedding any tears over it. But for Baylor, I think it's a great thing, just because for one, it kind of is a neat thing for Steve Rodriguez and that team to have dealt with so much of that adversity that Dave alluded to and win a Big 12 regular season title. And I also think it's a part of their hosting resume. I mean, their RPI is up to 22 as it stands right now, which is in that neighborhood, but it would probably need to be a couple ticks higher for them to feel comfortable about it, but maybe not if they do end up winning that Big 12 regular season title. So, we had the conversation a couple weeks ago about who it means, at least I think we had this conversation on the podcast about, who it would mean more to win the Big 12 title or something along those lines. And I think that was the argument that I made, is that, Baylor kind of needs it for the resume, whereas Texas Tech maybe not quite so much.
You know, in this conversation about all these sweeps last night when we were talking through the top 25, Dave brought up a question that I want to open back up so that you, the listeners, can hear kind of where we went with this. But Dave asked, is college baseball down this year? And I guess the genesis of that question is that, there are so many teams that are going up and down. There are all these sweeps. We're not used to seeing that. Some of these series just haven't been as competitive, as you'd expect. Now, not all sweeps are equal. Ole Miss swept A&M, yes, but they walked off the Aggies twice. So, that was an exciting series. It just happened to go down as a sweep. Whereas, Baylor, like Dave alluded to, ran away and hid from TCU. Ultimately, it was a close-ish game on Friday night, and then they blew them out the next 2 days. But when we look at this, the matter of is college baseball down, for me, I think that the absence of elite teams, truly, clearly elite teams, like we had the last couple of years with Florida and Oregon State especially, is kind of what we're reacting to there. UCLA is really, really good. I don't want to take anything away from the Bruins, but they also don't have all the first round picks that Florida and Oregon State had a year ago. The talent is really good in Westwood, but there aren't, Oregon State had 3 picks in the top 40 last year. Florida had 3 in the top 35, I want to say. If you go back to their national championship winning team, you add in Fajardo to that. And so those teams were special teams. I don't know that we have that yet. Maybe this UCLA team still proves that to us. Maybe someone else, maybe this Vanderbilt team or Stanford team proves that to us, but they don't have the elite pro talent on these teams. And we can also look at this from a draft perspective. Is the draft down? Is the college class down? And the answer is the draft overall is down. It's hard for me to say the college class is down when Adley Rutschman and Andrew Vaughn are sitting right there at the top of the class, and you have guys like J.J. Bleday and Hunter Bishop, inserting themselves into the top 10 pick discussion with the years they're having. But at the same time, the college pitching class, there's nothing like Logan Gilbert or Brady Singer or Jackson Coar, or I could run off like 10 names from last year's class that we don't have really those kinds of guys. Lodolo and Manoah are very, very good, but there's not a whole lot behind them right now. So all of that is to lead into this question, Dave. Where are you thinking in terms of is college baseball down or not?
Well, I think you just alluded to part of it. And I think part of it, you talk to any major league scout or anyone involved with Major League Baseball, the junior class of pitchers is definitely thinner than it usually is. You don't see, you know, and no disrespect to Alek Manoah and Lodola, those guys are going to be top picks, but usually we see 5 to 10 to 12 of those guys throughout the country in the junior class or more. It's a little short this year. So I think that's part of it. But then here's the seven that I think, seven staples that I think, previous staples that I think makes us kind of question how much is it down. And that's Florida, TCU, Virginia, South Carolina, Cal State Fullerton, and I'll throw Florida State in there. All seven of those programs aren't having their traditional year like we've probably seen over the last 10 seasons or more. And usually teams that are notoriously in the top 25, notoriously teams that are hosting, notoriously teams that are bidding for Omaha in June. We may not see any of those teams in Omaha this year. We may not see some of those teams in the regionals. So that might be one of the reasons why I brought that up last night. No disrespect to some of the teams that are having great seasons, and there's some turnover, some different programs are starting to win now. But it's some of the kind of like, I'll just say kind of the dinosaur programs that were not traditional. I'll throw Miami in there too, even though they're having a good year. We're not talking about Miami like we were 10 years ago. So it's, I don't know if it's the changing of the guard or what it is, but when you take those programs out of the mix of your conversation, programs that have been notorious for being talked about this time of the year and into June, it kind of does change and question where is college baseball. Now, don't get me wrong. It's at a high level right now in regards to popularity, hence the third assistant should have been passed. I'm throwing in my little soapbox on that. But it's just different. It's different because we don't see some of those historical programs that we see every year. And that's why maybe I asked that question last night. Is it down? I don't think it's down. I think college baseball is still good, but I think going back to it, I don't think there's a dominant team, and that's no disrespect to UCLA, Stanford, any of those teams in our top 5 or 10, but there's not as many of my guests.
So I'll throw my, because I think you guys covered it pretty well, because my thoughts kind of echo what you guys put forth there. But the other thing I would say is that I think this is something that we as the college baseball media or college baseball fans out there, just the college baseball community, I think you're just going to have to kind of get used to. I mean, not that there won't be teams go on runs like we've seen from Florida and Oregon State in recent years. I think that will occur. But think about it this way. Cal State Fullerton's regional streak is in all likelihood done. Miami missed had that long postseason streak, and they missed the last 2 years. They're back on the horse now to a certain degree, but that streak came to an end. Dave mentioned TCU going to Omaha 4 times, and now they're looking at missing a couple years in a row. Florida State has come closer to missing in recent years than they have ever. I think this is just kind of a new reality in college baseball, and we've talked about, you can talk about parity in college baseball a lot of different ways. You can point to, look at the teams that get out of regionals now, look at the teams that have gotten to Omaha. I mean, for goodness sakes, Kent State and Stony Brook got there in the same year. Yeah, exactly. So you can look at it that way. You can look at the Big Ten is in a lot of ways a power conference now in college baseball. You can point to that success in a lot of ways. So you can talk about parity in a bunch of different angles. But I think one of the ways that, you know, we haven't talked about as much is just the idea that there are probably not going to be any situations like what Mike Martin, not just because of longevity, but in terms of the high-end success, like that's just probably not something we are ever going to see again. And this is true in all college sports, by the way. UCLA is never going back to the John Wooden era. They're never going to do that again. College football has had a reckoning.
I want to say every sport except for college football, where right. You're condensed to 5 teams can win the national title.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. But even then, you've got programs in college football that have kind of had to reckon with the fact that it's not the good old days anymore. So there's been some kind of shift there, at least in college football. But basketball and baseball, I just think that's a different era where we're not going to see that kind of thing anymore. To the point where I said, if you would have paused college baseball after Omaha last year and said, okay, everyone stop, who's the program that you think is probably best set up to do what Florida State has done for the last 40 years, and you would have said probably Florida based on, you know, all the evidence put forth. And, you know, Florida's really going to kind of have to hustle to make sure they get into regionals this year. So that is not a lock at this point. So I think that's a good example of just how much parity we have. And this is the new normal, I think.
Yeah, I guess this invites a conversation that we often have about leagues, in that, like, how the flagship program in a league performs really impacts what generally people think of that league in a particular year. So, you know, in the Big West, when you see Fullerton down, the easy thought is that the Big West is down. And like that's just going to be where most people's minds go, because they see a team that isn't Fullerton winning the Big West, and that can't possibly be right. Now, that's happening this year, and the Big West is down, and UCSB is really good, but it goes beyond that. But, you know, can college baseball exist without some of these bigger brand? Not exist. Can college baseball, you know, can we wrap our minds around, you know, some of these bigger brands not necessarily living up to that? And ultimately, I think people will adjust. You know, USC hasn't been one of the biggest names in college baseball in a decade at least. And, you know, I think we've all kind of come to terms with that reality, that now when you look at the Pac-12, you're not looking for USC to be at the top. You're looking for UCLA. You're looking for Stanford. You're looking for Oregon State. And if you told someone 15 years ago that that was what the Pac was going to look like, they would have thought you were crazy. You know, so I think it can happen. That might happen a little more slowly. And it's also going to be strange if some of these teams really struggle to maintain success over an extended period of time. I mean, I mentioned especially Florida and Oregon State of the last 2 years, but, you know, it's not that long ago that South Carolina was in three straight finals. You know, Oregon State won back-to-back titles not that much longer ago than that. And so I don't know how, you know, without runs like that, I think that is kind of where this is coming from, is that we reset after last season with the big Florida and big Oregon State class moving on, you know, and even the year before with that exceptional Louisville group of 2 years led by Brendan McKay moving on into pro ball. With all of that happening, those cycles happening over the last 2 years, we didn't really have a team ready to take that mantle and run with it. We had all of these teams like kind of just in a couple year stretch. And now we're trying to find that next, I don't want to say dynasty when these things only last a couple years, but I mean, that's basically what we're looking at in college baseball these days, is your dynasties only last a couple years. So we're looking for that next one. And I guess without that right now, that I think is where this perception really is coming from, is that, and it doesn't help that UCLA is doing what it's doing in a media environment where it's hard to watch UCLA, to be frank. Like, they are not on ESPN week in and week out. They're just a little harder to go watch than Florida was a year ago. And so I think that hurts.
I agree with that completely, that comment right there. They've been our number one team for 7 weeks. And I'm good friends with John Savage. I'm a peer of John Savage. I'm from Southern California. And I see them on paper that they're a good team. And I've complimented them that they're a complete team. Our number one team in the country, or our number two team in the country, I have never seen with my own eyes by watching them on TV to say, whoa, that is a good team. And so I think that you are right about that we're not, that could be one of the reasons why this subject came up, is that some of the best teams are not even known throughout the Midwest or the South or the East around the country. And I think recruiting has a lot to do with this too, with this change. I think, you know, I won't say what coach it was, but I had a conversation with kind of a mid-major coach the other day. And he said, it's harder to recruit now because kids want to flock to one of the Power Five conferences. So I think that kind of says why some of those teams that we've talked about, the TCUs, the Floridas, the Florida State, that are in those big conferences, are maybe
down a little bit, because are they down, or is it just that the other ones are getting better in those conferences now because they're getting more of the players around the country because most of the kids want to flock to the Power Five conferences?
Joe, did my rambling there hit on anything with the media attention or the TV attention? Really, I shouldn't say media. It's entirely a TV issue. Do you think that plays into it, that, you know, because UCLA hasn't been in Omaha the last few years, and they play, I don't want to say in a vacuum, but it's harder to watch them, that America, the college baseball viewing public is just less familiar with this specific Bruins team?
Yeah, no, I think there's something there for sure, because I think we take for granted how easy it is for the average person, not even the college baseball diehard, is going to, you know, find out how to watch their team's games, whether it's on one of the ESPN streaming services or whether it's on some random app they've never heard of, they have to download and figure out or what have you. I think college baseball fans or fans of a certain program are going to figure that out. And those fans also know that UCLA's games, just you can't see them when they're, especially when they're at home. So, but for everyone else, I think that, you know, that's just kind of something we can do game to game, is see these teams. So yeah, I think there's certainly something there. And I think UCLA in particular, because, you know, Stanford, I've seen some of them because they stream a lot of their games, that, and if they're not protected by the Pac-12 network to where I can't see them, like if it's just on the Stanford stream, I can see those games. And sure, it's not quite up to where some of the SEC Network Plus or ACC Network Plus streaming is, but it's something. With UCLA, it's just kind of like a streaming black hole in that way. And we've talked about that before, so we don't need to fully rehash it. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't give the average college baseball fan a chance to check in on UCLA and hear about this team and learn who exactly Michael Tolia is, or to look at and see Ryan Garcia throw for themselves. I think that matters.
I also think, I mean, we've definitely talked about this before. I think some of this is also that some of the coaches have changed, that college sports, because of the inherent transitory nature of college athletics, these players are only in school for a few years and then they move on. You know, the stars a lot of time in college sports are coaches, and college baseball has lost a lot of its stars in the last couple of years, not only on the field, you know, talking about Sainer, McKay, you know, guys like that, Madrigal. You also have seen Mark Marquess, you've seen Jim Morris retire, we've seen Wayne Graham retire, Augie Garrido a few years before those guys. And, you know, when you have guys like that leaving the game, it does have an effect. And there are definitely coaching stars ready to fill that void. You know, Kevin O'Sullivan, Dan McDonald, Tim Corbin, Brian O'Connor, those guys are all there, but it is a little different, you know, and I think that, you know, when you lose a guy like Jim Morris, who made so many trips to Omaha, who was Miami for the last 25 years in a lot of respects, I think that does have an impact on the overall perception. You know, Gino DeMare has been at Miami a long time as an assistant coach, but it's been as an assistant coach, and to think that the average college baseball fan really has much of a knowledge base on Gino, of course they don't. And you know, that's going to take some time, you know, to rebuild some of this stuff, and especially at some of these bigger programs that went through changes in recent years. I want to move on to one of the actual stars. I feel like I missed an opportunity for a segue there, because we do have one of the greatest college baseball stars of the moment had a huge weekend this weekend. Jake Mangum, Mississippi State center fielder, who right now, outside of Adley Rutschman and Andrew Vaughn, probably is the most famous college baseball player in the country, I would guess. He became this weekend the SEC's all-time hit record. He breaks Eddie Furness's record with his 353rd career hit on Saturday in Starkville. Furness's record stood for 21 years, former LSU great. And Jake Mangum now is past him. He is 12th all-time in the NCAA hit list. He has 10 more regular season games and who knows how many more postseason games to add to that. And I was doing some quick math last night, and on his current pace in those 10 regular season games, he can get up to something like fifth all time on the NCAA leaderboard. And then he has an outside shot, I would say, at 400 hits for his career, which is something only two players, Phil Stevenson and Khalil Green, have ever done before. So I want to just take this moment for a Jake Mangum appreciation. He has been so good for college baseball. He turned down the draft a couple times to come back to Starkville. You know, he's talked before about, on this podcast, he's talked about why he did that, how much he enjoys playing at Mississippi State, and how much he wants to win a national championship. But guys, just what did you think of Jake's accomplishment this weekend, and where does he stand right now, I guess, in the college baseball elite?
I'll say this. I actually was watching that when he got the hit, and it made me very happy, not just for him, but for Mississippi State and college baseball, because going back to our, I think every coach wishes they had a young man like Jake on their team. And, you know, we all know the story. Four coaches have had him over 4 years. And what a special young man he is, a player he is. You know, he gets the most out of his body. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. You know, Eddie Furness, I was in the SEC back at Tennessee when Eddie Furness was coming through there, and he was just a monster and a great hitter also. But to see what Jake has done and what he's done, not just for Mississippi State, but for college baseball, you just watch the young man play. He plays hard. He has fun playing the game. And it's refreshing to see. And I hope that more Jake Mangums come into college baseball. And that's nothing against, there's a lot of great players, a lot of players that play hard. But it's just, it makes the game better overall. And it's just a credit to him. Just being so resilient and just continue to fight. And it was kind of, you know, he had talked about he just wanted to get the record beyond him, because I could imagine the buildup and all that. And he actually showed more jubilation when he got the hit to tie the record than when he did when he broke the record. And kudos to him. I think he goes in the name. He gets on the wall with the Rafael Palmeiros and the Will Clarks and all the great players that have come through Mississippi State. His name is right up there with them now. And you know, it's when you look at them, if they all stood side by side, you'd go, really, that guy is the hit king of all of SEC. And that's nothing against Jake. It just goes to show that's what's so beautiful about baseball. The biggest and the strongest aren't always the best. And sometimes it's the bigger heart, the bigger desire. And he's definitely been that for four wonderful years at Mississippi State.
Yeah, the shout out first to Dr. Eddie Furness, practicing medicine in Nacogdoches, Texas. Shout out to Nacogdoches, Texas. Oh. Stephen F. Austin State University head coach Johnny Cardenas in Nacogdoches. But the thing that's interesting about this for me, putting it forward a little bit, is that Mississippi State's got 10 regular season games left, and at a bare minimum, at least a handful of games in the SEC tournament, and then a handful of games in a regional. To where he can really kind of set this mark out where it's going to be really, really tough to break. So if he continues hitting at a pace like he has, which is obviously a torrid pace, there's a chance that this is a record that's going to stand up, you know, longer than where Eddie Furness's record stood up. So I think this is kind of a special thing, in that I don't think we're necessarily going to see this anytime soon.
Yeah, Dave, it was interesting you mentioned, you know, Palmeiro and Will Clark there, and at the new stadium in Starkville, they have statues of those two guys outside the home plate entrance. And they, you know, it's two of them. So they kind of, you know, bookend the entrance. And I am now wondering where the statue of Jake Mangum is going to go. Like, are they going to put a third one there? Is he going to go out in the outfield somewhere? I don't know. But they're going to have to do something to honor him before too long. Of course, his career is going to have to finish first before they put up that statue, but he will live in Mississippi State lore a long, long time. He has definitely earned that. And I was talking with John Cohen when I was in Starkville a few weeks ago about Jake, and of course John Cohen had Mangum just for his freshman year, but John has been in the SEC an awful long time, seen an awful lot of hitters, and you know, he was talking about just how hard of a needle it is to thread to be able to break that hits record. And, you know, we're seeing it not just with Mangum, who just got it done, but Antoine Duplantis has a shot still to get past Furness for the LSU record. And the two of them, I mean, you just have to, what Cohen was saying is you have to come in and you have to hit right away as a freshman. There can't be any adjustment period, really. You have to immediately perform. And then you have to continue to perform really for 4 years. So to do that, you know, that means avoiding a sophomore slump. That means avoiding getting hurt. But it also means avoiding the draft for whatever reason. So it means that you're not quite what pro baseball is looking for. And in Jake's case, that's because he's a little small. There's some questions about how much impact he makes with the bat. You know, a lot of these hits are singles, and how is that going to translate is kind of the question. Jake is kind of a throwback player in that regard, and Duplantis faces many similar questions, I think. And so there has to be something just a little bit wrong with them from a professional profile standpoint, but they have to be outstanding college players, and they have to want to play college baseball. And to be doing that at the level they've done it at for the last 4 years has been crazy impressive. And in Mangum's case, he didn't even really avoid getting hurt. He spent a large part of his sophomore year hitting with one hand because he was playing with a broken hand. And he still hit more than 300 that year. I mean, just so many things about what Mangum has done are really impressive. And when you look at the way his teams have won, it's really impressive. You know, he is one of the few constants on those teams because, again, they've had four different head coaches during his career. You know, there just aren't that many players that overlap through Mississippi State's current three straight super regional streak. And you know, ultimately they capped last year by getting to Omaha. And that was a great moment for them, obviously to finally break through in what had been such a tumultuous season. But I just think a lot of that is a credit to Mangum and the example that he sets, you know, for his team and just the way he goes about his business every day. And if you can't tell, I really have enjoyed watching Jake Mangum play for 4 years. And I am going to miss him when he's in pro ball. We're all going to miss him in college baseball because he is such a good example of what this game can be and has been just such a fun player to watch anytime you go to watch Mississippi State. Covered a lot of ground, but we still have three teams that moved into the top 25 this week that I want to kind of address how they got here. Again, that's Miami, Missouri, and BYU. Joe, let's start with Miami. This is a team that is all the way into the top 15 in RPI, number 11, excuse me, 31-14 overall, 14-10 in the ACC. You saw them a week ago at Louisville. How legit are these Canes?
So they're certainly legit to the point where they can host, and the numbers kind of prove that out. And their remaining schedule, they've got, you know, Wake and Duke left, which that looks a little bit tougher than it did a month ago, but still two series where you'd think they'd take the Canes would take care of business there. So I think on that level, they're certainly legit. Offensively, also really legit. This is the most physical Miami lineup that I think I can remember. I think people might go back to that Zach Collins, Willie Abreu College World Series teams and think that might have been a more physical offense. But, you know, there was times where Collins and Abreu were made up more than half the team's home runs. This is a team that really kind of has the depth in terms of physicality. I mean, Alex Terrell, 17 home runs. That's you know, an impressive number there. But, I mean, Raymond Gill's had a really nice year. And Adrian Del Castillo has been a great guy in the lineup for him. Freddy Zamora, Michael Amditas, you know, finally healthy Michael Amditas. I heard that anecdote, and I think I knew this intellectually, but I just really hadn't stopped and thought about it. The fact that, you know, this is really Michael Amditas' longest stretch of health since, like, his junior year of high school, because he was hurt senior year of high school. Then his, you know, his first couple of years at Miami have been injury-plagued as well, and he's swinging the bat pretty well for him. So, you know, they've got, like, a guy like Gabe Rivera has as much, maybe as much raw power outside of Terrell as anybody on the team, and they just don't really necessarily have the at-bats for him. So I really like what they have offensively, and like I said, I think it's the best that I can remember. Where there are concerns, though, are on the mound. That's what makes hosting so important, because like I mentioned with Ole Miss earlier, I just don't know if it's a team that can afford to get off schedule. They've had some injury issues. You know, I was there when Evan McKendry left early in his start with Louisville, and he did not start this past weekend. Chris McMahon has missed a couple starts, and so they are really kind of paper thin on the mound right now. But the good news is They've held it together. I mean, Brian Van Bell's just a really good battler on the mound. He's been their Sunday guy primarily, and he's just really been really steady every week and given them a chance to win every week, which is, you know, really all you can ask for out of that typical Sunday guy. And Slade Ciccone, the highly touted freshman, has taken some steps forward, and he was good this past weekend. So, you know, they've started to kind of patch it together with those guys. They turned to Tyler Kaiser this past weekend, and he got the job done for them. You just wonder how long they can expect to be able to kind of piece it together that way, because, you know, what happens is it kind of makes their bullpen a little bit thinner. And while a guy like Daniel Fetterman, for example, has been really, really consistent for them this season, there just really isn't that bullpen depth beyond the first couple guys out there. So I've got concerns about the pitching, but I think – should they get into a regional and host it, I would still like their chances to come out of it, just because they are really offensive. And full disclosure, I don't know the extent of the injuries with McMahon and McKendry and kind of their prognosis moving forward. And certainly if those guys come back, it puts them in a lot better shape. But I think this is a team that's in good shape to host. I think it's a team that can make some noise, and it's certainly not a team that you want to see if you yourself are feeling a little bit thin on the mound or don't have a ton of confidence in more than your top couple of guys.
Yeah, J.D. Ortega does such a great job with the Miami pitchers and has for several years there. And they're piecing it together, but they're doing a good job of it. And they're doing it. I'm not surprised that Miami has built to this point. They've been bringing in some solid recruiting classes. Gino DeMari was the recruiting coordinator before he was promoted to head coach after Jim Morris's retirement. And, you know, there has been talent coming. You know, building depth at Miami is never an easy proposition, but they've done a good job of building some depth on the mound. And finally, they played a ton of freshmen a year ago. And much like we've talked about before with Arizona State, eventually that pays off. It's hard at the time, but it does pay off. And I think you're seeing the results of that for the Hurricanes right now. They check in at number 23 this week. At number 24 is Missouri. The Tigers, we mentioned earlier, swept South Carolina this weekend. They improved to 30-15-1. They are 10-10-1 in the SEC. Dave, they're doing this a lot on their pitching, which is something Steve Beazer has been known for throughout his career, both at Mizzou and in Southeast Missouri State, where he coached Joey Lucchese, among others. How impressive has their pitching been, or how good has their pitching been, and how impressive is it that Mizzou has stuck together? They are appealing their decision, but they were dealt that NCAA decision, but they were dealt a pretty big blow just a couple weeks before opening day when they were declared ineligible for the postseason. They are currently eligible. This is important to note. They're eligible because of the appeal, and the appeal is – the NCAA process on that is not expected to be wrapped up before Selection Monday, which will make the Tigers eligible for the postseason this year. We'll see what happens with that appeal ultimately. But this year we are expecting them to be eligible because that appeal will not be heard. But Dave, I mean, just how impressive has it been that Mizzou has been able to stick together and not fall apart while they've been going through all that they've been going through?
Well, I'm not so sure that all that, the allegations that came down might not have brought them closer together as a program, as a team. And they've rallied off of that. It's unfortunate. I understand. I don't ever believe in people doing wrongdoings, but it's unfortunate that the allegations are prior to probably any of these players ever walking on campus at Missouri, that they had a chance to be affected by. And I hope that whatever comes down about that comes after this team gets to the postseason. But it's been about their pitching. It's purely about their pitching. Coach Beazer's obviously done a good job of keeping that team together. Fred Corral, who handles the pitching staff, has done a good job. You know, their starting rotation is not, you know, TJ Sikkema's having a good season. Their Friday guy, Jacob Cattleberry, is, you know, he matches up a lot against some of the Friday starters, so his numbers aren't quite as good. But overall, it's been, when I looked at them, when I looked at their numbers, it's been a cumulative of their bullpen has really saved them tremendously. And, you know, Ian Bedell, their closer, is having a good year. Connor Ash coming out of the bullpen is having a good season for them. And Cameron Duel, I'm not sure, it's either Dooley is doing a good job coming out of the bullpen. Their numbers are fabulous. 2.96 overall as a pitching staff. but even better in SEC play at 263. In SEC, teams are only hitting 214 off of them. It's the low 200s overall, but it's their strikeouts to walks. They're 3-1, and they're getting the job done. The thing that concerns me a little bit about Missouri, even though they've got the great pitching, is their record is fabulous at home, like many programs, and they struggle when they go on the road. And that's what they're going to have to do over the next 3 weeks, and they go into the tournament. So they're going to have to find a solution to do better, but it's purely been about their pitching staff. They're getting some timely hitting, obviously, and it's not like their hitting is horrible, but it has been purely about the pitching staff. And again, I know Fred Corral on a personal basis. I'm really happy for him. He's bounced to some programs, was previously at Georgia a few years ago. I'm happy for him that he's found a home and he's making a big impact and helping Coach Beezer really get that program going. And you know, when you look at the big scope of things, Missouri, it's probably the smallest stadium and the most glamorous stadium in the SEC. It really is fabulous to see what they're doing in the powerful SEC. And again, this year it's been about their pitching staff, and they're tough to go up against. And it's going to be very interesting to see them going on the road this weekend in a big matchup to kind of solidify maybe that third spot in the SEC East coming up this weekend when they travel up here to Knoxville.
Yeah, this weekend, probably not a whole lot of runs going to be scored with Missouri and Tennessee going at it. I also think it's been very interesting how Missouri has been able to do this without much production from Cameron Misner during SEC play, especially. He's a preseason All-American. He's a potential first-round pick, and he has really been scuffling at the plate. But Mizzou has been able to overcome that in large part because they just pitch at such a high level that their offense is, they don't have to score a whole lot of runs for them to win games. So Missouri has been impressive, and you know, it's just been a strange spring in Columbia, but they're looking good right now for the postseason. We'll see how they finish out these final 3 weeks of the SEC regular season. Following Missouri into the rankings at number 25 is BYU. The Cougars are leading the West Coast Conference. They're 29-10 overall, 13-5 in the WCC, and they've put together just a nice solid year. And I feel like this BYU team is a little different than the profile of what we kind of expect from a BYU team. When you play at the altitude that they do there in Utah, usually you see some significant power numbers. But as a team, they've only hit 27 home runs, which isn't a small amount, but it's also not that many considering the altitude. And they're slugging .409, again, good, but not really great. What they do, though, is they pitch at a much better level than some of the BYU teams in the past. I feel like in the past, BYU has often had like a big time ace at the front, but they have a lot of depth this year. And Joe wrote about BYU maybe a month ago now. You can check that out over at baseballamerica.com. And Joe did a good job outlining just how much depth they have in their pitching staff. Easton Walker has been a revelation. He started the year in the bullpen. They had to put him in the rotation. He was so good. And they go pretty deep just in terms of guys that they can trust and guys they can count on. And I think they do a good job of not issuing too many free passes, which, again, is going to be important if you're going to be playing at altitude. You don't want to be just giving away base runners. But this is also a team that's just done a good job in what is a really solid conference this year. We talk about how the Big West is down. Well, the West Coast Conference is not. And I think that when you look at a BYU team leading the West Coast, it's been pretty impressive right now. They've been able to sweep some series. They had last weekend, or this weekend, they swept at Pacific. A week ago, they won a series at Washington, which was a really nice road series win for them. And they're up to number 32 in the RPI right now. And we'll see how they finish. But right now, as it stands, they're looking good for a postseason bid. But they have a chance to put together a really nice season and already are doing so as close out the month of April here. Joe, just because you had dove a little deeper into BYU recently, is there anything else you wanted to mention about the Cougs?
No, well, I guess just that you mentioned the pitching depth there being a kind of a cut above what you'd expect, and and B, compared to a lot of what other WCC teams are going to be able to do when they come to BYU to play games there. I guess I will admit, if I'm being honest, that I thought it might drop off a little bit. And I thought that we might see, okay, this is a kind of a neat little story now that they're pitching really well, that sets them up well, so on and so forth. But I kind of expected to look up a month later and see that they'd kind of come back to the pack. And to your point, they really haven't. That's still kind of a calling card for them. And I noticed it with Easton Walker, who at the time I wrote the story hadn't given up an earned run. He has now, but that's because he's been starting. So just really impressive what they've been able to do in a situation, as you alluded to, that's not always the easiest trick to pull off.
So BYU in at number 25, and they're trying to get back to regionals for the first time in a couple of years as well. So they're the team to watch right now in the WCC, but that race is very tight, and I expect it will go down to the wire. That brings us to our shout-outs, where we highlight players, programs, coaches, whoever. Joe likes to have a little more fun with it, go off the wall. We highlight people that we haven't gotten to on the podcast, but are worthy of mentions from the last weekend. So, Dave, why don't you start us off? What do you have this week?
Well, first off, I want to start off by congratulating Patrick Rady at Vanderbilt. I believe he tied the school record for most wins in a career. Patrick, out of here, out of Knoxville, out of Farragut High School, and I know Patrick personally, and I want to congratulate him. Just a superior young man, and obviously he's had a great year at Vanderbilt and continues to put up big numbers. From a team perspective, I would like to congratulate Fresno State. I saw them earlier in the year when they came into Knoxville, played Tennessee. They were scuffling a little bit. When I talked to Coach Batesall, he really liked his team. Like most coaches, they got out of the, they got out of the gate slow because of weather, but he really thought they had a good team right now. They're leading the Mountain West and having a good year. Also want to congratulate Cal Poly, who's leading the Big West. We talk a lot about UC Santa Barbara. We talk a lot about UC Irvine. Now Cal Poly still has to play both Irvine and Santa Barbara, but they're leading the Big West right now at 10-2. And I know there's a lot of people around the country and a lot of people probably on the committee right now that are cringing about that, because if that ends up staying like that, that means the Big West in a down year could possibly have three teams that come out of that conference, or that could hurt one of those teams that finished in second or third. So congratulations to Larry Lee and Cal Poly. And then again, we talked about it earlier. Congratulations to Baylor Bears, leading the Big 12 right now, going into Fort Worth and sweeping TCU in a big weekend that really elevated them as we head down the stretch. But congratulations to all those. And, just to make another note, we talked about it a lot, but not only a congratulations to Jake Mangum, but thank you for what you've brought to college baseball, because it wasn't fun to compete against you when I was on the other side, but it's been very fun to watch what you've accomplished throughout your career, and I know there's still a lot more to go throughout the rest of the season. So more of a thank you than a congratulations even.
All righty, Joe, what do you got for us?
Teddy, as the guy on this podcast with the journalism school degree, is it a conflict of interest if a writer accepts the giveaway at the stadium that they're giving away?
So I think that this depends. So I would say just no, but like, you're fine. I have done so before.
Okay, great. Well, good. So now I don't have to do that pretend thing where I'm like, well, I definitely did not take. But Indiana University was having Superhero Day at the park at Bart Kauffman Field yesterday, and they had these capes, these Indiana University capes that have like a little Velcro piece in the front, and you could wear it like a superhero cape. I thought it was kind of a cool – or you could turn around and use it as a bib, which actually might be the better application for it. So I just thought it was kind of a neat giveaway. I said as a joke to game day workers there about whether or not I told them I was asking for a friend if those were just for fans or if they were for people who were working at the game, and they went and got one for me, so it was very nice of them. But just kind of a neat giveaway. On a more serious note, kind of a cool giveaway that IU did there. I thought it was a great way to kind of get the kids involved in the game. There were a lot of kids out on their outfield berm that were playing. You could tell they were playing like pretend superhero games, which is just kind of a cool thing to see out at the park. So very, very wholesome entertainment there. Real quick thing, just one sentence. I saw on Twitter, well, it's going to be more than one sentence. I've already got off track. But I saw on Twitter, Indiana State, periodically they'll kind of throw back and show pictures of Larry Bird having played Indiana State baseball for that brief period of time. In the Indiana State uniforms, I'd invite you to go back and look at Indiana State's baseball Twitter. The uniforms are fantastic. What are we doing? Why are the Sycamores not wearing these all the time? That's all I have on that. A couple quick shout-outs. For the Southland Conference, individuals in the Southland Conference, Bernie Martinez, a pitcher for Incarnate Word. I remember seeing him kind of when I was doing the Southland preview, looking back at him, and he just had a really nice career for them, and that has continued. He has 17 appearances, most of them out of the bullpen, 15 of 17 in relief, and he's thrown 56 and two-thirds innings. So we're talking about a real workhorse here. ERA of 1.11. For a Incarnate Word team that is very much improved, I kind of am kicking myself in the preseason preview. I wanted to move Incarnate Word higher. I think I had him picked fifth or sixth, and which I felt was pretty aggressive already, and I kind of wanted to move them higher up towards third or fourth, and I wish I had, because they are now currently tied for third in the conference with the Central Arkansas Bears. And so I wanted to shout out Cody Davenport. Cody Davenport's a right-hander, right-hand starter, who I saw back in 2016 at the Southland Tournament. He threw a gem in the Southland Tournament. And I remember thinking, this guy's going to be a fun kid to watch as he gets better. He was just a freshman at the time. But his career has kind of been pretty – he's taken a circuitous route to being one of the best starters in the Southland again. His sophomore year, his ERA was above 6. Last year, it was pushing 4.5. This year, though, in 11 starts, he has a 1.53 ERA and 76 and a third innings pitched. And Central Arkansas also tied for third place in the Southland Conference. Obviously, they had a big sweep against Sam Houston State a couple weekends ago. So a couple little Southland Conference items there for you.
So I want to mention Navy, first of all. The midshipmen this weekend, I believe, became the first team in the country to clinch a regular season title. They went 3-1 on the weekend, and that combined with Holy Cross winning its series against Army, who I probably talked about glowingly last week. I don't honestly remember. I know I wrote glowingly about Army last week. Anyway, Navy wins the Patriot League as a result. They're done with their Patriot League schedule. The Patriot League schedule continues next week, and then they move into their conference tournament. They're one of the conferences that wrap up early, which gives the midshipmen an edge on becoming the first to win the title, but they got it done. They have won 5 straight regular season Patriot League titles, and they now earn home field advantage for the Patriot League tournament. It will be interesting to see how that one plays out, and I don't know how many teams are going to be rooting for Navy in that tournament, however, because I don't know how many teams are going to be wanting to face Noah Saun in the NCAA tournament. He was spectacular again this weekend. He struck out 15 in a 7-inning shutout, gave up just 4 hits against Lehigh. So Navy becomes your Patriot League champion this weekend. I also want to mention Coppin State, which swept Maryland Eastern Shore to improve to 24-17 on the season and set the program record for wins. Coppin State had traditionally been a cellar dweller in the MEAC the last 2 years. Last year, they tied the program record. This year, they have already surpassed that record. They are winning the MEAC North Division. They're going to be looking to try and take that next step now and get to a regional. We will see how that transpires over the next couple weeks. I also want to mention Lyle Lynn at Arizona State. This weekend, I spent it in Seattle watching Washington and Arizona State. And ultimately, in a losing effort on Saturday, Lyle Lynn, coming off the bench, hit 2 home runs and a double. Quite the finish to the game for Lyle Lynn, and it earned him a start on Sunday where he continued to hit the ball pretty hard. You know, he's been an important player for Arizona State in the past, kind of has gotten a little bit lost this year trying to break into that lineup with Sam Ferry at catcher and Eric Tolman as a DH. It's been hard to get him some consistent at-bats, but he did his best this weekend, especially there on Saturday, to earn them and very nearly won the game for Arizona State. So that brings us to the end of this week's college baseball content here on the podcast. We have plenty more on the website and will throughout the week. There will be a new updated projected field of 64 on Wednesday. And we'll have plenty of other stuff to keep you busy. So make sure to check that out over on baseballamerica.com.
looking ahead to next weekend, we have some more big series. The SEC West supplies us with another blockbuster with Mississippi State traveling to Texas A&M. We've got Oklahoma State going to Oregon State, and we've got Arizona State hosting UCLA. That should be a fun matchup of styles. UCLA has the best ERA in the country, probably the best pitching staff in the country. Arizona State probably has the best lineup in the country. So that should just be fun to see who wins out in that matchup. And then in the Missouri Valley, Indiana State and Illinois State are tied for first place. They meet this weekend in Normal. And you got FAU and Southern Miss going at it in a battle of the top two teams in Conference USA. So kind of across the country, we've got some fun stuff this coming weekend. It's also, we're getting into finals. So if there are any players listening, make sure you're doing your studying. Don't want to miss the final few weeks of the season. Dave, did you ever have to deal with that?
No, I did not, luckily.
That is very good. So be like Dave's former players, everyone, and do your studying. Don't. And hit your grades for this semester. We will be back here on the Baseball America College Podcast next week to talk about mostly those series, maybe also finals, who knows. And so I would encourage you to, if you haven't done so already, to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app, be that iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you're listening. And if you can, rate and review the podcast as well, that helps other people to find it. So make sure you do that, and we will be back here next week to talk more about college baseball with you. So for Joe and for Dave, I've been Teddy Cahill. Thank you for listening.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.